The Fourth District Appellate Court of the State of Illinois has now convened. The Honorable Peter C. Kavanaugh presiding.
Good morning. We will first call 4-22-0414, People of the State of Illinois versus LaMarcus Bassett. Counsel for the appellant, would you please state your name for the record?
My name is Elizabeth Boddy from the State Appellate Defender's Office.
Thank you. For the appellee, counsel.
David J. Robinson for the State of Illinois with a 7-Eleven student.
My name is Radomir Yurovich. I am a 7-Eleven student for the University of Illinois.
Very good. Thank you. Counsel, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. I represent LaMarcus Bassett. On appeal, Bassett raised two arguments. He argued that trial counsel was ineffective, his petition made a substantial showing that he was deprived of the effective assistance of trial counsel. And he alternatively argued that if this court found that he did not make a substantial showing, it was because post-conviction counsel provided unreasonable assistance in not sufficiently pleading that allegation. And today I would like to focus on that second argument concerning post-conviction counsel's unreasonable representation and not sufficiently pleading his allegation of ineffective assistance of trial counsel. Bassett filed a pro se petition in 2018, which made four allegations, one of which was that trial counsel failed to investigate his case. And in that regard, the pro se petition provided that the complainant, Deontario Thompson, had a grudge against Bassett. He blamed him for the death of one of his friends. And so he falsely implicated him in this crime to get back at him. That pro se petition advanced to the second stage. Counsel was appointed. 2 years later, post-conviction counsel filed an amended petition. Counsel did not re-raise all of the original pro se allegations. He said he was raising only the ones that had merit. One of those was trial counsel's failure to investigate this case. The amended petition provided that Bassett told his trial attorney before trial that the complainant had a grudge against him. And the petition also alleged that trial counsel failed to review evidence, failed to review strategy, failed to sufficiently meet with Bassett before trial to develop a sound strategy, and did not apprise Bassett of the chosen strategy. Unfortunately, the petition did not plead either prong of Strickland. And it was dismissed for that reason. The amended petition didn't even cite Strickland or any case for that matter. So the petition never explained how counsel was deficient in terms of this evidence or strategy. It didn't explain how the trial would have been different, but for counsel's deficiencies. It didn't even mention the word prejudice or explain why this grudge evidence was material. It didn't even explain the grudge evidence. We only know the basis for the grudge from the pro se petition, but appointed counsel didn't include that information in the amended petition, nor did he explain why this grudge evidence was material or how it would have affected the outcome of the trial had the jury heard it. The state recognized the deficiency.
Excuse me. Good morning. I have a question. With respect to this evidence regarding a grudge, we're essentially talking about trial strategy, are we not?
Correct.
And matters of trial strategy, as far as ineffective assistance of counsel, are generally immune, except where trial counsel's strategy is so unsound that we can say that trial counsel entirely failed to do any meaningful testing here or adversarial testing. But that really isn't the case here, is it? We've got 10 motions in limine that were filed by this attorney, many of which were granted. There was vigorous cross-examination. So how can we say that post-conviction counsel failed in his or her job if the underlying claim has no merit to it?
Well, first, the underlying claim does have merit to it. and post-conviction counsel decided it had merit. He interviewed witnesses. He reviewed the record, and he said on the record that he was including only the issues in the amended PC that he believed had merit. This was one of them. And so we're not talking about, oh, the defense counsel cross-examined the witnesses, he filed motions in limine. That doesn't speak to counsel's failure to investigate, which is the claim. He had a duty, once Bassett told him about this garage evidence, counsel had a duty to investigate it. And those allegations that he failed to review it are unrebutted by the record. There's nothing speaking to his failure to investigate this garage evidence.
Counsel.
And so that allegation isn't rebutted by the record.
Counsel, speaking of trial strategy, what about the fear of opening the door as to what this grudge was all about? Wasn't that real fair and something the trial counsel had to take into account with regard to the strategy?
You know, I disagree with that allegation made in the state's brief. Defense counsel could have cross-examined the complainant about his relationship with the defendant. He could have elicited the evidence that way. And if he needed to perfect the impeachment, he could have called a witness. He didn't necessarily have to call the defendant to testify to this garage evidence. So he could have elicited the evidence without opening the door to admitting any prior convictions.
What other evidence was there? What do you have another? Do you have an occurrence witness who?
Well, that's another reason why the petition is inadequate, because it didn't present the facts to establish either prong of Strickland. It didn't present enough facts. Like I said, it didn't even explain the basis for the garage evidence. It didn't explain why it was material. And that's why the trial court dismissed it, because it didn't plead either prong of prejudice. The state's motion to dismiss put the post-conviction counsel on notice that the amended petition was defective, and post-conviction counsel did nothing to rectify those defects. He didn't file a response. And at the hearing on the motion to dismiss, when the state once again said, petition fails because you didn't plead prejudice, you didn't explain what counsel could have done differently, you didn't even present facts that could establish prejudice, again, counsel was silent and said nothing, just repeated the vague, conclusory, incomplete allegations that were contained in the amended petition.
But going back to the issue, the underlying basis for this, I mean, and Justice Enoff pointed out to this, there were 10 motions in limine. They cross-examined on no less than 7 points. They addressed it in the closing to show the vulnerabilities as it related specifically to the victim. They didn't know the date specifically that they were robbed. They said $150 versus $50 being taken. I mean, isn't that, when we really get down to it, meaningful adversarial testing?
Well, first I want to say that when you're looking at whether PC counsel complied with Rule 651C, we don't get to the merits of the allegation. A remand for new second stage proceedings with the appointment of new counsel is automatically required when there's a violation of 651C, which occurred here. So it's inappropriate for us to speculate or even try to adjudicate the merits when they weren't fully presented. The problem is the claim wasn't fully presented. Not all the facts were presented. And as to his cross-examination of the witnesses and his filing of the motions in limine, sure, trial counsel did that, but that doesn't speak to his failure to investigate this claim. That he cross-examined the witness about inconsistency in terms of how much money the defendant supposedly took or what the gun looked like has nothing to do with whether he was biased against my client. That was never addressed. And it's because he failed to investigate it. Once Bassett told him that the complainant had a grudge against him, he had a duty to investigate it, and he did not investigate it. And that claim is unrebutted by the record. The fact that he cross-examined the witnesses doesn't rebut the claim that he did not investigate this evidence.
Well, what proof, that's a claim. What proof do you have he didn't investigate it? Maybe he investigated it full and well and decided that basically, you know, the trial strategy that was utilized was sufficient not to potentially open the door or go down another rabbit hole defense counsel decided not to go down.
I think that's reading into the allegation. We know from the allegation that Bassett informed him of this garage evidence. Bassett's claim states that he informed him of this evidence. Trial counsel didn't review it. Trial counsel didn't review the strategy. That's unrebutted. So we can't read into it and say, well, yeah, maybe he did look into it and just didn't agree with it. That's reading into a claim. We can't do that at this stage. We can't, we have to take the allegations as true because they're not rebutted by the record. Cross-examining the witness about inconsistencies or filing a motion in limine doesn't rebut the claim that this trial attorney didn't investigate this grudge evidence. And the grudge evidence would have thrown this case in an entirely different light. We can't forget this jury was hung. And had it heard that the complainant, on which this case completely hinged, had a reason to lie and to fabricate the allegations and falsely implicate my client in the crime, this information would have thrown the trial in a totally different light. So, sorry, go ahead.
A couple minutes ago, you, in answering a question from Justice Kavanaugh, indicated that the evidence of the grudge or bias could come in through a different witness or in a different way. But I fail to see how any evidence could have come in of that except through the defendant. And again, that would have opened the door, as Justice Kavanaugh indicated, to his prior conviction for second degree murder. I mean, anything anyone else would have testified to would have been hearsay. So that wouldn't have been allowed.
Well, he could have cross-examined the complainant about it. He could have asked the complainant about his relationship with the defendant and if he blamed him for the death of his friend. He could have asked the complainant about it, and that would not have been hearsay. And maybe other people were privy to this retaliatory motive who could have testified to it. But the problem is the PC, the amended petition, is so inadequate that we can't speculate. We don't know all the facts because they weren't all presented.
Well, I would just suggest that if counsel took that path, he'd be here on ineffective for different reasons.
For presenting grudge evidence, for presenting evidence that the complainant had a motive to falsely implicate a defendant in a crime.
I don't know how you're going to do that without opening the door for the state to drive home what the grudge was all about.
But that it doesn't matter what the grudge was all about. What matters is the complainant was blaming my client for the death of his friend. That in itself isn't prejudicial. If anything, that's the evidence that helps the defense because it shows that this complainant had a reason to lie, to make up these allegations, to get back at my client. So the fact that the complainant blamed him doesn't prejudice the defense. It only helps the defense. I don't know if you're suggesting that his prior conviction was this crime against the complainant's friend, but there's no evidence of that at all. And so, as I stated, he could have brought that grudge evidence in without my client testifying. So his prior conviction would not necessarily have come in if counsel pursued this strategy by introducing evidence that the complainant had a grudge against my client and had a reason to make up these allegations against him.
Counsel, focusing on the Rule 651 certificate, the filing of that, does it not create a presumption that counsel has complied with the requirements of that rule? And in looking at that, along with the Suarez case that's cited, wouldn't you say that Suarez is distinguishable because in that case, there was no filing of any certificate whatsoever?
So the filing of the 651 certificate creates a presumption that's rebuttable. And the presumption here was rebutted because the amended petition did not plead either prong of Strickland and was dismissed for that reason. Suarez is not distinguishable. There's nothing in the Suarez decision limiting its holding to cases where a 651 certificate was not filed. In both Suarez and the instant case, the petitioners are in the same position. In Suarez, the petitioner was denied the reasonable assistance of counsel. Here, Bassett was denied the reasonable assistance of counsel. And when there's noncompliance with 651C, which occurred in both Suarez and the instant case, an automatic remand is required. And that's what this court held in People versus Burns, which is cited in the brief. An automatic remand was required for new second stage proceedings in that case, even though the attorney filed a 651 certificate, because the presumption of compliance with 651C was rebutted by the record. So under Burns and under Suarez, an automatic remand with new second stage proceedings with the appointment of new counsel is required. That is, if this court finds that that Bassett failed to make a substantial showing of ineffective assistance of counsel. So if there are no further questions, I would request that this court remand the cause for new second stage proceedings with the appointment of new counsel. If this court does not find that his petition made a substantial showing that he was deprived of the effective assistance of counsel.
I see no questions. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the appellee, you may argue.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Radomir Yurovich. I'm a 7-Eleven student from the University of Illinois, and I'm representing the people of the state of Illinois in this case. The defendant is arguing that he received ineffective trial counsel because the trial counsel failed to impeach the victim using the defendant's own prior bad act. And as to the reasonable assistance of the post-conviction counsel, the post-conviction counsel has adhered to Rule 651C. The post-conviction counsel under the Supreme Court rule is required to examine the record and make amendments necessary to properly present the claim and then certify as to that. The counsel has done that in this case, which is why the merit of this particular underlying claim matters. This court has said so, and just 2 weeks ago in People versus Perez, that merit is a consideration in this case. So as to the merit, Strickland requires that trial counsel's performance was deficient and the defendant was prejudiced. And this is not the case here. The trial counsel, as the defendant's own petition shows, has consulted with the defendant on a possible trial strategy. The trial counsel has stated that the state's case is weakest as to the gun element, and that shows where this was heading. The trial counsel has specifically excluded any evidence of a prior murder conviction or any reputation evidence of the defendant being robbing people and killing people, and it shows that he was clearly looking to exclude any mention of this particular evidence. This evidence, if he then went around and then asked the victim about this possible grudge of the defendant killing his friend, the state could very easily then go on redirect and address this issue, ask more details about why does he think he killed his friend. It could introduce this particular prior murder conviction.
May I ask a question?
Yes, Your Honor.
Defense counsel has strategically chosen this firearm defense over the bias or grudge defense if he never even investigated it, if he never investigated the bias defense.
Well, it's just, even if this particular bias existed, a defense counsel could very well just assume that everything the defendant is saying is true, look at this evidence, and then say, no, I do not want to introduce this. And then as we saw, the defense counsel, the trial counsel has went through several issues on the cross-examination and pointed out all the weaknesses of the victim, pointed out every single inaccuracy of how victim was uncertain what day this event took place, how much money was stolen, on possible differences in the caliber of the gun, or also on just the prior or pending charge of the victim and possible bias stemming from that pending charge. So he went through, cross-examined this, and then if we look and step back and say, very reasonably, the trial counsel could have at this point concluded, I've presented a good case, and I do not have to go into this particular angle, which would very well introduce the evidence of the prior conviction.
Well, but you mentioned there was a motion in limine granted, was there not, to exclude that evidence of the prior conviction?
So, yes. Yes, there was that motion in limine granted. But if this trial counsel has then asked the victim about this prior murder and the bias, that would open the door and would either be introduced by the trial counsel himself or on redirect by the prosecution. Which really speaks to the merit of the claim, which is a consideration when looking at the reasonableness of the post-conviction counsel. Now, the post-conviction counsel, instead of arguing on the specific issue of bias, decided to argue on generally that the trial counsel had no strategy and presented no adversarial testing. This was, of course...
Excuse me, counsel, if I may. With regards to post-conviction counsel, though, the amended petition, I mean, there was no proof or evidence of the earlier altercation with Thompson, and it was just stated as a grudge. It was conclusory, if you will. The same as the appellant has noted, you know, there was a failure to specify, you know, what evidence and trial strategy that trial counsel had failed to review. And so it seems that there were several omissions in that ground three, and that it was very, very conclusory in nature and not specific as to what you would necessarily expect from information provided when he states that he has done the necessary investigations and amended the petition. How do you address that issue?
Well, first, the merit of the underlying claim is an important consideration. However, going beyond that, as we look at the entirety of the post-conviction counsel's performance, he consulted with the defendant after numerous delays. He consulted with the defendant. The defendant ended up agreeing to not respond in writing and instead of rely on the hearing in order to present the case. And then trial counsel presented as much as was necessary in this particular situation. It was a short portion of the entire brief that he spoke on this particular issue, and then concluded that that's as much as he needs to present in order to really display this particular claim. But when we look at the reasonableness standard, that shows that the post-conviction counsel was reasonable. He presented adequately and he showed really what was the underlying claim, which is that there was no, and I apologize, there was no adversarial testing by the trial counsel. If there's no further questions, I would ask.
I do have a question. How would this grudge evidence or bias evidence be inconsistent with the defense, the firearm defense, that Thompson really didn't know the difference between, whatever caliber of weapon, and so therefore perhaps what he saw was a BB gun and therefore it wouldn't have been a firearm? How would those two defenses have been inconsistent?
Well, they would be inconsistent as in it would be a damaging thing to introduce. It would be distracting to the jury. And at the end of the day, you do not want to hear the jury that you do not want the jury to hear that your client has previously murdered somebody or at least has the reputation. And this is the exact evidence that was excluded by the trial counsel. Any victim's opinion testimony on the defendant, any of the defendant's prior convictions, any pending convictions by the defendant, and it's or pending charges, I apologize. And it's really, when we look at what was going on or in the trial counsel's head during the trial, you can say that he could have very reasonably said, okay, this is not going to end up being for the benefit of my client, and instead just conclude right there that he presented a good case. He showed a lot of inconsistencies in this victim's testimony. And then let's not prejudice the jury possibly or hurt my client's chances by distracting the jury or telling them that he has previously killed somebody. Well, if there's no further questions, I would ask this court to affirm the judgment of the circuit court. Thank you.
Seeing no questions, counsel, rebuttal.
State makes a lot of assumptions and mischaracterizations. First, there's no evidence that Bassett killed the complainant's friend. There's no evidence he murdered that man. There's a claim that the complainant thought he did. That's different. And evidence that the complainant was motivated to lie and to falsely implicate my client in a crime to get back at him for something he thought he did would have significantly impeached his credibility. This case boiled down to only his testimony. Only he linked him to the crime. And so had the jury heard evidence that he had a motive to lie, that would have put this case in an entirely different light. The state says, well, defense counsel, maybe he got this information and he decided he didn't want the jury to hear that evidence. Again, there's no proof my client killed someone. Also, that's assuming, that's reading into the allegation. There's no evidence that the defense counsel investigated this. That's the whole point. That claim is unrebutted, which means it's taken as true. He didn't investigate this. And merit at the, when we're arguing if PC counsel provided unreasonable assistance, we don't get to the merit. We can't get to the merit because how can we adjudicate a claim on its merits when not all the facts were presented? How can we adjudicate a claim on its merits when the claim wasn't properly pled? We can't. We can't speculate on what the trial court would have done had it been properly pled. That's what this court said in Burns. That's what the Supreme Court said in Turner and in Suarez. We can't consider the merits. When PC counsel doesn't comply with 651C, a remand is automatically required for new second stage proceedings. The state tries to excuse counsel's failure to file a motion to dismiss on grounds that, well, he talked to the defendant about it and the defendant was okay with him not filing it. Guess what? PC counsel's job is to ensure that a defendant's constitutional claims are properly presented. It's not the defendant's job to decide, well, don't file a motion to dismiss. It's PC counsel's job. That's why we have 651C, is to ensure that constitutional claims are properly presented. So while PC counsel doesn't have a duty to file a motion to dismiss, in this case, he had a duty to make sure that his claim of ineffective assistance counsel was properly presented, which is either file a response to the motion to dismiss, or at the hearing, correct the defects in the amended petition. Counsel did neither, and that's why the petition was dismissed. In the court's written order, it specifically said that the amended petition merely stated as a conclusion that counsel was ineffective without explaining how, in the context of this case, that counsel performed deficiently or why the deficient performance prejudiced the defense. In other words, he made vague, conclusory, incomplete allegations without explaining them, without tying them together, and without properly pleading them. Under Suarez, under Turner, under Burns, an automatic remand for new second stage proceedings is required when counsel does not comply with 651C as occurred here.
Counsel, you indicated, and you're continuing to rely on Suarez, that it applies here, but with all due respect, there was no 651C certificate filed in Suarez. So the analysis that I think we need to apply here is different. We start out with a presumption, do we not? Because there was a 651C certificate filed. So Suarez doesn't help us.
I disagree. In both cases, counsel didn't comply with 651C. And we have this court's decision in Burns, where a 651C certificate was filed and the relief was an automatic remand for new second stage proceedings without looking at the merits of the claim because PC counsel didn't comply with 651C. Whether a certificate is filed or not filed doesn't dictate or shouldn't dictate the result. In both cases, counsel did not comply with 651C. So it's illogical to say, okay, in a case like Suarez, where there's no 651C certificate, we'll give that petitioner an automatic remand. In this case, you're still denying the effective assistance of counsel, but we're not going to give you an automatic remand because counsel filed a 651 certificate. That means the certificate is now insulating PC counsels from doing their job. All they have to do is file the certificate, not consult with the client, not review the record, not properly amend the petition, which he's required to do under 651C. Again, 651C exists for a reason, to ensure constitutional claims are properly presented. I see that my time has expired. So I ask that this court remand the case for new second stage proceedings. If this court finds that Bassett did not make a substantial showing that he was deprived of the effective assistance of trial counsel.
Thank you. Any further questions from the panel?
No.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Thank you both. The court will take this matter under advisement and now stands in recess.